Alright, Hare Krishna, please accept my full obeisances. Vanchakal Patruva Shukrupasundavya Chapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Om Agyanatim Ryanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshana Miritam Natasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So today is going to be the final class on the Shikshaskam. We've reached the final verse, and we read that the previous verse was the beginning stages. It kind of bridge the gap between the mature stage of Bhava and the beginning stage of Krishna Prema, and so that someone who was in Bhava and then in the beginning stages of Prema, they begin to have these spurtis, right? Little brief, fleeting images. They have spurtis, these experiences where Krishna appears briefly in the heart and fuels their eagerness for Krishna's association. And so last one said that feeling of separation. In that feeling of separation, the anticipation of meeting Krishna, that even the blinking of an eye feels like a yuga. And then Lord Chaitanya describes it as being cooked in a slow fire. So here in the final verse, actually it's Lord Chaitanya takes on the mood of Radharani, since he's the combined incarnation of Krishna and Radharani. And she is the very form of prema, the very form of love of God. So the ashraya vigraha, sometimes she's called the very form of this of love of Godhead. And so what happens is that as the eagerness to finally meet with Krishna, see Krishna, reaches a certain level that comes to fruition. And there's actually, I'm going to start out, I'm going to read there's a description, kind of a general description given of that moment when one first encounters Krishna in the Madhurya Kadambini. And then there's kind of a first-hand description in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when one finally is reunited with Krishna, that the slow burn of the of that purva rag, that anticipatory separation, is taken away. So we'll start with the Madhurya Kadambini, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, I had my place, but I missed it. Just 1 second here. So then one day, in the state of acute separation, the magnet of prema attracts black iron like Krishna, making him appear before the eyes of the devotees. Remember that one of the overarching characteristics of Krishna prema is that it's Krishna Karshani, it controls Krishna, attracts Krishna. And so when one's love of God had become sufficiently mature, it says it just attracts Krishna almost like he's an iron filing coming to a magnet. This is his, because Krishna prema, this is his sladhani shakti, power of enjoyment. This is what Krishna lives for. Also, is this type of relationship that happens in Krishna prema. So it says if he comes and it causes him to appear before the eyes of the devotee. The Lord then floods his devotee's senses with the unrivaled auspicious qualities springing from his own eternal being: beauty, fragrance, pleasant voice, tenderness, tastiness, generosity, and compassion. The uncommon sweetness and ever-freshness of these qualities create an acute, ever-increasing longing in the heart as the devotee lovingly relishes them. To describe the vast ocean of transcendental bliss appearing at this time, the words of the poet are no better than a tiny lota. He says he can only give you a very faint understanding of this. Some meager examples are to be given. A traveler on a desert path, scorched by the hot rays of the summer sun, somehow finds shelter under the cool shade of a vast banyan tree, densely tangled with branches and surrounded with hundreds of vessels of ice-cold Ganga water. An elephant caught in the forest fire for a long time is finally bathed by unlimited streams of water from a thick bank of rain clouds. A person plagued by hundreds of mortal diseases and burning with thirst by chance drinks exquisitely sweet nectar. The incredible happiness that each of these three feels only gives a tiny glimpse of the unbounded bliss felt by the devotee in prema. The Lord first reveals his beauty, Saundarya, to the eyes of the utterly astonished devotee. The sweetness of his beauty makes all the senses and the mind become like eyes to see the Lord. The resulting symptoms of the ecstatic love, such as tears, shivering, and being stunned, cause the devotee to swoon in ecstasy. To revive him, the Lord next reveals his fragrance, Sarabya, to the nostrils of his devotee, and all the devotee's senses and mind take on the quality of the nose to smell. As the devotee starts to swoon a second time, the Lord says, "O my devotee, I am fully under your control. Please don't be disturbed. Just realize me to your full satisfaction." The Lord thus discloses his pleasing voice, Sausvarya, to the ear of his devotee, and as before, all the senses become like ears to hear. As his devotee swoons a third time, the Lord mercifully gives him the touch of his lotus feet, hands, or breast, revealing his delicate softness, Sokarmaria, according to the different rasas of the devotees. To those in the mood of servitude, dasya, he touches his lotus feet to their heads. To those in the mood of friendship, sakya, he grasps their hands with his. For those in the mood of parental affection, vatsalya, he gives the touch of his hands by wiping away their tears. For those in conjugal mood, prayasi, he awards his tender softness by embracing them to his heart with his long arms. Again, the devotee's senses all take on the sense of touch to feel his softness. At the start of the fourth swoon, the Lord restores him by giving his fifth madhurya, the taste of the nectar of his lips, sarasya. But this he reveals only to those who at this time are in the mood of conjugal love and desire this, but not to others. The devotee's senses all take on the sense of taste, and he faints for a fifth time. This blissful swoon is so deep, the Lord can revive him only by bestowing his sixth quality, audarya, generosity. Audarya refers to the state where all the Lord's qualities, beauty, fragrance, sound, touch, and taste, forcefully manifest at once to his devotee's various senses. Then prema, understanding the mind of the Lord, increases to the utmost, and with it the keen hankering of the devotee. Prema becomes like a powerful moon in the heart of the devotee, presiding over the ocean of bliss and creating hundreds of waves. It causes an almost destructive friction in the devotee's heart among the competing tastes. At the same time as the presiding deity in the mind, the moon of prema expands its power and allows the devotee to relish all the different tastes at the same time without conflict. Seeing the devotee yearning to relish the Saundarya and other sweet qualities of the Lord all at once, but helpless like a chataka bird, trying to catch every raindrop at once in his beak, the Lord considers, "Oh, why am I keeping so many wonderful qualities to myself?" To let the devotee partake of them all, the Lord manifests his seventh amid sweetness, Karunya, compassion, and the superintendent of all the Lord's Shaktis. Karunya, also known as anugraha, kindness or favor, manifests himself in the lotus eyes of the Lord. To his devotees in the mood of a servant, it is known as kripa shakti. To his other devotees as vatsalya, or sometimes as karunya. When it appears in relation to devotees in conjugal mood, it is known as chitta vidravini, akarshini shakti, that melts the heart of Krishna and attracts him. So he goes on with describing a bit further with that. So it's, you know, so powerful, each of the different qualities of the Lord, that the devotees lose consciousness and can only be revived by a further manifestation of Krishna's qualities. And then in the Sri Brihat Bhagavatamrita, there's account given of in the second two parts, there's the kind of the protagonist, this Gopa Kumara, this young cowherd boy who goes through all of these, he travels throughout all the different places within the material world and spiritual world, and finally ends up in Goloka. And he says, and so he finally appears in Vrindavan. He comes through Mathura, and he comes to Vrindavan. And he comes at the gate of Nanda Maharaj's palace, and he says that he's asking. He sees this. He says, an elderly lady came by. I bowed down to her and asked in a plaintive voice where Sri Nandanandana was playing today. The elderly lady said, "This morning, that giver of life to us, Vrajavasis, went into the dense forest to play with his cows and friends and his respected elder brother. Later at dusk, he will return." And she says, "All the Brijvasis are waiting on this path along the Yamuna, their eyes transfixed on the road. These trees stand with leaves erect, eagerly awaiting the chance to see him. Surely he will come along this path." And so he also then starts to watch. And then he starts to hear, he says, "Mixing with the mooing of cows, it was the supremely attractive murmur of Krishna's enchanting flute. That sound, sweet melodies of sporting played notes, diverse with musical embellishments, was like nothing ever heard in the material world. Its attractive force at once overwhelmed everyone in the cowherd village." And so when that happens, everything starts to go even more crazy. It's all everyone's coming out of their houses and then coming towards the path where they expect Krishna to return from tending the cows. And he's describing the state of the different people, how they were, you know, in anticipation of Krishna's arrival. And he says, "Then from a distance I saw him, his charming flute in hand, running quickly," just like it says in the Madhurya Kadambini, "he's attracted like a magnet." He says, "He emerged from among his friends and animals and approached me, saying in a sweet voice, 'Look, Sri Dama, here is my friend Sarupa, the sun who shines on the lotus of your family.'" And he describes how Krishna appears, how he was dressed, and just different characteristics. And he says, "He leaped forward and came close to me, compelled by the affection of his helpless devotee. I fainted in love," just like it's, they swoon, "at seeing him. He caught hold of me by the neck, and suddenly he too fell to the ground. A moment later, I reawoke and carefully freed my neck from his grasp. I stood up and saw him on the ground in a faint, moistening the dust-covered path with his tears." So in this case, even Krishna loses consciousness. And then everyone starts to be concerned about Krishna, all the residents of Vrindavan, the cows and the calves and everyone, and the birds, even as they're all concerned that something is wrong with Krishna. This is then Lord Balabhadra, that most skillful of persons, cried for a moment, but then seemed to regain his composure and looked all around. With great care and attention, he made me hold his younger brother by the neck with my arms. He wiped Krishna's beautiful limbs clean with my hand and made me loudly call out to him with many plaintive cries. Then he made me lift Krishna up from the ground. Suddenly Krishna opened his eyes, sealed till then by a flood of tears. Seeing me, he joyfully embraced and kissed me. But then he looked around and became embarrassed. The best of lords took my hand in his own left lotus hand, and received me as a long-lost bosom friend. He asked me various questions. Then he greeted all the people of Braj and entered the best of cowherd villages with the gait of an elephant." This is a couple of descriptions of what happens when the prema becomes mature and attracts and exhibits that power of Sri Krishna Karshani, the ability to attract Krishna, and which is really being and then from then on one is in Krishna's association. Mm-hmm. So here in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is Anchalita text, chapter 20, text 42, the verse that followed, Krishna gave the seventh verse of Shikshastika. I mean, Chaitanya gave the seventh verse of Shikshastika and explained it somewhat. He said that it felt like I said, being cooked in a slow fire. And then that gave rise to his mood as Radharani. And he spoke this verse. He says, Lord Krishna has become indifferent to me just to test my love. And my friends say, better to disregard him. While Srimati Radharani was thinking in this way, the characteristics of natural love became manifest because of her pure heart. The ecstatic symptoms of envy, great eagerness, humility, zeal, and supplication all became manifest at once. In that mood, the mind of Srimati Radharani was agitated, and therefore she spoke a verse of advanced devotion to her gopi friends. And that's in the same spirit of ecstasy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited that verse. And as soon as he did so, he felt like Srimati Radharani. So it's actually this last verse of the Shikshastakam. This is something spoken by Srimati Radharani. And then here we are, the last verse of the Shikshastakam. Aslishava padaratam pinashtumam adarshanan mamahatam karotuva yatatatava vidadaturam pato matrananatastusa eva naparaha. And the translation here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I mean, really the basic thrust of it is similar to really the same as what we see in the kind of the more. Let me read the more commonly known translation. I know no one but Krishna is my Lord, and he shall remain so even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. Here, in this translation, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as it's a little bit more graphic, the imagery is more graphic. The kind of the two takeaway things. That Krishna is the only worshipable object, the naparaha, it's like it says in the commentary, more commonly known translation. I know no one but Krishna is my Lord, and it's a completely selfless one. These are still quite apparent from both translations, but there's a little bit more. It's kind of more graphic here in this one, and this one goes, let Krishna tightly embrace this maidservant who has fallen at his lotus feet, or let him trample me. Or break my heart by never being visible to me. He is a debauchee ever after all, and can do whatever he likes, but he is still no one other than the worshipable Lord of my heart. So it's the imagery is that right, the devotee has fallen at Krishna's feet, right? Down at Krishna's feet, and Krishna can do one of two things, right? You know, a merciful person, you know, can reach down. Take the person by the hand, lift them up and embrace them. Right? Krishna can do that. I'm at his feet, he can do that. This is Padaratam, his fall is at the feet. Right? So Krishna can reach down, take that person by the hand, lift them up out of his great kindness, and he can embrace them. Aslisha. Great embracing with great pleasure. Or Pinashtu. He can just walk all over that person, right? Literally, in this case, trample the person. This marmahatam broken, make him broken hearted. This is like a, more literally, you know, it's like a mortal wound, you know, like just you know, a mortal wound to the heart, you know, like you've been stabbed through the heart with a spear. Not just you know, kind of disappointed type of broken hearted, but it's very, very. Very, very heavy, because we understood that from previously how much Krishna's association means to someone in Krishna Prema. And so he says he can do that, and even if he's a lumpata, a debauchee who mixes with other women, still he's Smat Prananath, the Lord of the life. Right, in Bhagavad Gita, right, there's in what is it, 10:9, I think it is. It's a Maschita Madgata Prana, the destination of the life. And when we talk about life here, it means, you know, we're talking prana, the life force. Not just like when we say our life, we kind of sometimes mean it's like, you know, the series of events, the things that we've done. It's a kind of our little, you know, the narration of our life, that with our life story. But this is Krishna is not just, you know, kind of the ultimate meaning of our life story, but he's the Lord of the life force. He's like a Madgata Prana, the destination of the life air in us that makes us live and move is Krishna. Is Krishna. And so here there's really two things that we're going to see that are characteristics, two main things of the characteristics of this sort of Krishna Prema, that it is completely selfless, and it is completely focused on one object. And sometimes these things, at least, you can have something focused. You can be focused on one object without being selfless. Right? We have even experience here in our material lives. Perhaps somebody may be really, really focused on one thing or one person, and that is what they value the most. Right? But it won't be a selfless attraction. They want it because they feel that they need that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, he says that here when it talks about embracing, he says this is not a selfish personal pleasure, but it's the feeling that one loves Krishna and is pleasing Krishna. So Krishna's happiness is the cause of one's of bliss in that case. And he says that the marmahatam, when one is mortally wounded, that also is a source of pleasure, because then one is remembering Krishna very vividly. Again, we mentioned that in Krishna Prema, and even in Bhava, one's identity becomes, you know, it's not that one feels that one merges with Krishna, but like Prabhupada says, one is one with Krishna's interest, one in interest with Krishna. So that one only wishes Krishna's pleasure, and that Krishna's pleasure is really the only thing that matters to us. So, and there's many, many verses here, actually several verses where Lord Chaitanya explains more about this. He speaks after this verse and gives greater explanation. So we're going to go through those. We're going to see this theme spelled out. Right, where Krishna is it's Krishna that's the goal, not anyone else. And actually, that is something that really, 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 really touches Krishna's heart. And that there is no self, there's no even slight taint of self-interest involved. That's why we see, you know, if there's self-interest of some kind, right? Then, like Prabhupada mentions this, I can't remember what it is. It's in one of the purports to when he on some of the music CDs. Is, you know, he gives sometimes purports to the different bhajans he sings, and there's one where I think it's by Narottam Das Thakur, and he says that we see that one of the characteristics of this Yugala Priti, I think he says, right? This conjugal love, he says, is that it never breaks. Never breaks. He says, here, even if there's cause, here he says, all relationships, they can break. right? If one's self-interest isn't satisfied, there's something that the other person can do that will cause you to say, just like previously, that it said here that Radharani is saying that when Krishna neglects me and to test my love, then my friends say, you know, forget about this guy. Don't worry about it. Right? They say, he doesn't care for you. Look what he does. Right? He doesn't have your interest at heart. Right? So eventually, even someone we may care for deeply, there will be a breaking point. Right? So he says that one of the tests of selflessness is that there is no breaking point, because there's no calculation of one's own self-interest. Saying, you know, Krishna's treating him badly, you know, treating me badly. He can't even think that way, because your pleasure, your happiness doesn't even exist. It is Krishna's happiness. And it's better if we go through some of the verses, it'll be clearer about this. So the two things, it's completely focused on Krishna and Krishna alone, and completely selfless. So here, going on, Lord Chaitanya says, I am a maidservant in the mood of Radharani. He speaks, he says, I am a maidservant at the lotus feet of Krishna. He is the embodiment of transcendental happiness and mellows. If he likes, he can tightly embrace me and make me feel oneness with him. Or by not giving me his audience, he may corrode my mind and body. Nevertheless, it is he who is the Lord of my life. My dear friend, just hear the decision of my mind. Krishna is the Lord of my life in all conditions, whether he shows me affection or kills me by giving me unhappiness. Sometimes Krishna gives up the company of other gopis and becomes controlled, body, mind and body, by me. Thus he manifests my good fortune and gives others distress by performing his loving affairs with me. Or since after all he is very cunning, is a very cunning, obstinate debauchee with a propensity to cheat. He takes to the company of other women. He then indulges in loving affairs with them in front of me to give distress to my mind. Nevertheless, he is still the Lord of my life. I do not mind my personal distress. I only wish for the happiness of Krishna, for his happiness is the goal of my life. However, if he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. And the Prabhupada has a purport. He says, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura says that the devotee does not care about his own happiness and distress. He is simply interested in seeing that Krishna is happy, and for that purpose he engages in various activities. A pure devotee has no way of sensing happiness. This is interesting. So here, a pure devotee has no way of sensing happiness except by seeing that Krishna is happy in every respect. So it's not an intellectual sort of thing that, you know, I've decided that Krishna is the most important thing, and even if I feel miserable, or that you know, by what Krishna does, then I will still love him and serve him. But actually, it's direct, that the Krishna's happiness is your happiness, Krishna's unhappiness is your unhappiness. It's direct. It's there's no mitigation, there's no intellectualization there whatsoever. Because it's one's identity is as one who is serving and pleasing the Lord. That's who one is. So if you can say that there is personal unhappiness, it means that one feels that one is not serving Krishna to his fullest satisfaction. Right? That's why that's where there's the misery in separation. One feels that Krishna is not enjoying as much as they could, as if my service were active at that moment. Krishna is not, you know, Radharani is feeling that she knows that she is the one who pleases Krishna the most, and so Krishna is associating with the other gopis and neglecting her, since she feels that Krishna is not enjoying as much as he can, and we'll feel sometimes, right, your parents can be angry with you if they think that you're not doing something that's really good for you. Right? She'll feel like that you know, he's Krishna's, you know, he's the stubborn bad guy, because he's not enjoying life to the fullest. So he says that there's no way of sensing happiness except by seeing that Krishna is happy in every respect. If Krishna becomes happy by giving him distress, such a devotee accepts that unhappiness as the greatest of all happiness. Those who are materialistic, however, who are very proud of material wealth and have no spiritual knowledge, regard their own happiness as the aim of life. Some of them aspire to enjoy themselves by sharing the happiness of Krishna. This is the mentality of fruitive workers who want to enjoy sense gratification by making a show of service to Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya goes on, as Radharani says, if Krishna, attracted by the beauty of some other woman, wants to enjoy with her but is unhappy because he cannot get her, I fall down at her feet, catch her hand, and bring her to Krishna to engage her for his happiness. When the beloved gopi shows symptoms of anger towards Krishna, Krishna is very satisfied. Indeed, he is extremely pleased when chastised by such a gopi. She shows her pride suitably, and Krishna enjoys that attitude. Then she gives up her pride with a little endeavor. This is called man. Where the again, it's still the thought behind it is Krishna's happiness, and so they may become a little, they may show some anger towards Krishna that, you know, why are you neglecting? So what, you know, why are you neglecting? In one sense, like neglecting your own happiness. This is disturbing to us, and we're angry with you for that. And when they see that Krishna is not, first Krishna enjoys that because this is part of the sweetness of the relationships that he has in his very sweet Vrindavan pastimes. And he knows why that anger is there, what is causing it to say it's only out of love for him. But then when it shows that he no longer is enjoying it, then it says it's given up right away. It's a little endeavor. And she says, why does a woman continue to live who knows that Krishna's heart is unhappy, but who still shows her deep anger toward him? She is interested in her own happiness. I condemn such a woman to be struck on the head with a thunderbolt, for we simply want the happiness of Krishna. If a gopi envious of me satisfies Krishna and desires her, and Krishna desires her, I shall not hesitate to go to her house and become her maidservant, for then my happiness will be awakened. The wife of a brahmana suffering from leprosy manifested herself as the topmost of all chaste women by serving a prostitute to satisfy her husband. She thus stopped the movement of the sun, brought her dead husband back to life, and satisfied the three principal demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar. And the purport there is, Prabhupada writes, this is the Aditya Purana, Markandeya Purana, and Padma Purana tell about a brahmana who was suffering from leprosy but had a very chaste and faithful wife. He desired to enjoy the company of a prostitute, and therefore his wife went to her and became her maidservant, just to draw her attention for his service. When the prostitute agreed to associate with him, the wife brought her the leprotic husband. When that leper, the sinful son of a brahmana, saw the chastity of his wife, he finally abandoned his sinful intentions. While coming home, however, he touched the body of Markandeya Rishi, who thus cursed him to die at sunrise. Because of her chastity, the woman was very powerful. Therefore, when she heard about the curse, she vowed to stop the sunrise. Because of her strong determination to serve her husband, the three deities, namely Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, were very happy, and they gave her the benediction that her husband would be cured and brought back to life. This example is given herein to emphasize that the devotee should engage himself exclusively for the satisfaction of Krishna, without personal motives. That will make his life successful. And Lord Chaitanya's Radharani goes on and says, Krishna is my life and soul. Krishna is the treasure of my life. Indeed, Krishna is the very life of my life. I therefore keep him always in my heart and try to please him by rendering service. That is my constant meditation. My happiness is in the service of Krishna, and Krishna's happiness is in union with me. For this reason, I give my body in charity to the lotus feet of Krishna, who accepts me as his loved one and calls me his most beloved. It is then that I consider myself his maidservant. Service to my lover is the home of happiness and is more sweet than direct union with him. The Goddess of Fortune is evidence of this, for although she constantly lives in the heart of Narayan, she wants to render service to his lotus feet. Therefore, she considers herself a maidservant and serves him constantly. And it says, these statements by Srimati Radharani show the symptoms of pure love for Krishna tasted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In that ecstatic love, his mind was unsteady. Transformations of transcendental love spread throughout his entire body, and he could not sustain his body and mind. So, the exclusivity of the gopis and other, especially the gopis, towards Krishna, but everyone who's a pure devotee of the Lord, is shown in one place when Krishna plays his flute and calls them. This is in the prelude to the Rasa dance, and it says that some of the gopis, right, some were milking the cows, some were dressing themselves, some they're feeding their babies. They were serving their husbands, getting dressed for various things, and when they heard the flute, they immediately left those things, even nursing their babies, right? And ran to Krishna. And as they ran to Krishna, you know, their husbands, their brothers, their other relatives, many times they tried to stop them. You can't go to Krishna, and they ignored them. So all, and Krishna remarked when he met them that how they had given up all of their other attachments, right? Children, husband, right, home, family, all these things are natural. You know, that one would have some concern for them, and they simply, I mean, you know, in the middle of nursing the baby, gone. Midst of serving the husband, gone. Even in the face of all these things, Krishna was the only thing in their lives. Nobody else. And Krishna remarked upon that, you know. And in fact, this oneness of being focused only on Krishna is what causes Krishna to feel a great indebtedness, and if it touches his heart very deeply. He tells the gopis that he can't repay them. Napariyaham. He says, even after, you know, some millions of lifetimes, I can't repay you. Because this is subjective. There's objective truth, and then there's Krishna's subjective truth, which is more real. Right? In fact, you know, because he feels that the devotees of his devotees, they love him exclusively. They have no other object of affection. And where he has, you know, countless numbers of devotees, right? He has so many different forms and so many, countless number of devotees, and he reciprocates with all of them, right? He doesn't have one exclusive focus, and so to his mind, that exclusivity of focus gives the gopis' love a higher quality, right, than his own. And therefore, he feels indebted and that he cannot reciprocate. Objectively, we understand that Krishna is there's no limit to Krishna. You know, so he can fully reciprocate with all of his countless devotees. He can appear before them. He can reciprocate with them completely, fully. There's no shortage of Krishna. There's enough Krishna to go around for everyone. And he reciprocates with them all fully. There's no, you know, it's not like he spreads so thin and therefore he can't reciprocate, that he can't love everyone. You know, he has that, but subjectively he feels that there's something so special about that love which only focuses on, has one, only one, one object and one object only. And so that touches his heart. And he feels obliged to devotees like that. This is one of the qualities that here is mentioned. It's not Prabhupada. There's no other. Only Krishna. You know? And it's a selfless sort of thing. Because also, I mean, when you say, one could be have one kind of overarching, you know, goal in life, but it can be for one's own personal pleasure. But here, the selflessness of it, you know, comes in when we see that no matter what Krishna does, no matter what happens, right, the devotee doesn't waver in that love for Krishna. It's not dependent upon any particular result. Only Krishna's happiness is desired. So Krishna, of course, wants to please his devotees, and so he's not in the business Radharani was saying, he can kill me if he likes. Bhakti Mata courses, right? He can kill me or keep me. And so Krishna, of course, isn't in the business of killing the devotees. He wants to please them. But to the devotee, it doesn't matter. Whatever gives pleasure to Krishna, that is their only source of happiness. And there's nothing that can be done to change that. Absolutely nothing. This is the selfless nature of it. We can't really understand that, because we all, you know, have some various levels of selfishness going on. But we can a little bit extrapolate and at least get some kind of faint, I think, intellectual understanding, because we do see different levels here in this world of selfishness. Really, that's what you have here. You don't really get selflessness except in comparison, as compared to some greater, we have different degrees of selfishness, really. Like if you deal with physics, they'll tell you there's no such thing as cold. There's just degrees of heat, right? And so a very small degree of heat is cold. Okay, so in their understanding, so in the same way here in this world, there's only different degrees of selfishness. So just like a low degree of heat will be perceived as cold, a low degree of selfishness is what passes for selflessness here in this world. But we see, you know, sometimes there are people who are simply so selfish, you know, they will do anything and everything to anyone just to attain their own ends. You know, people, especially people who are very powerful, do all kinds of cruel things just for their own amusement. There was this one Roman emperor who was famous for, you know, he brought the poisonous snakes and had them released in the middle of the... It wasn't enough to have gladiator exhibitions, which is, you know, pretty bad to begin with, you know. But in the midst of that, in the stands where people were watching, he had poisonous snakes released so he could see people freak out and get killed. And, you know, kind of more, not stage, but more live action stuff. He'd invite people for banquets, and then, you know, some people would be selected to be killed, or he'd release... One time he released leopards and tigers and whatnot amongst the guests. So there's things, you know, people will do absolutely anything to anyone to get their desires. There's so many stories of cruelty in the contemporary world and in history. But then otherwise, you know, we can see sometimes we're a little concerned about others. We have people we care about. Or even if we only know them, we hear somebody has, you know, suffered a great deal, we might feel some compassion for them. How deep does it go? Right? You know, that's the question. You know, how much will we sacrifice for someone else? Usually, you know, some place, and the limit of that will be, you know, the degree of the selfishness that's there. You know, we may feel happy, you know, if there are people who are close to us, we feel happy at their happiness. But how much of our own unhappiness will we take? You know, sometimes, you know, so the love of the parents is a particularly selfless one. So sometimes, we see many times parents suffer a whole lot for the happiness of their children. But if you push it far enough and hard enough, that will finally break. Mm-hmm. So here it's taken to its last final step, where there's not, so that the calculation simply isn't even there. That one's happiness is Krishna, serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. One's identity is that, and one's the only way to measure one's own happiness is to see Krishna. So there's no way, it's like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, there's no way to sense happiness except by measuring Krishna's happiness. And this is, you know, and Krishna, for the same way, says his heart is touched by this, it's melted by this, it's attracted by this. And he feels the same way. This is real love. And that's what's present in the spiritual world. That's what's trying to be given to us by especially Lord Chaitanya's devotees. This is our tradition. This is, you know, this is the kind of the birthright that we have, and the crowning achievement of our tradition. That's really what's Prabhupada was trying to give to us. You know, and we may feel very, very far away from that now, and be very, very far away from it. But good things are worth waiting for. Right? Even now, you know, people spend a lot of their time and energy to try to gain some very temporary goals. And so this is something that's, it can't be learned overnight, but it's so valuable and so extraordinary that even if we're, you know, kind of just begun the path, we're back more on the second shloka and more than the eighth shloka. This is something that should, inspire us to do our best on that, and on the point where we are now, knowing that this is what really is meant to be given. This is what Krishna wants for us. This is what Lord Chaitanya wants for us. Srila Prabhupada wants for us. Is to be able to come to that point. That's what we are. We think we're something else, but that's what we really are. And we have to look at those two things, the selfishness and it doesn't mean the one-pointedness. This sometimes also is misunderstood, right? That we'll be very callous to others. We don't see that with devotees, right? We see, you know, of course, that especially the followers of Lord Chaitanya are kind to everyone, right? And of course, that is because they see everything in connection with Krishna. They know that Krishna's desire is to bring people back to him. The devotees' hearts are very soft because they see that here are all of Krishna's parts and parcels. Prabhupada mentions that in the Upanishad, that's how the devotees attain love for everything, is by attaining love for Krishna. And because everything then was property of Krishna, that love properly goes to other things. It's still without losing its exclusive nature. The exclusivity of love for Krishna isn't diluted by that. So, you know, Prabhupada always said, you know, keep Krishna in the center of all relationships and all things like that. Because Krishna is, you know, everyone, if everything is seen in connection with Krishna, then love for other things that's, you know, in line with Krishna's interests, in line with Krishna's desires, doesn't violate that exclusivity. So we have to see things that are love, that are separate from Krishna, or seem to be separate from Krishna, and we have to see our selfishness, how much we're just looking out for number one. And we have to see that, you know, and we have to pray for those things to kind of go down. How we can find our focus and take the focus off ourselves. From whatever platform we're on right now. And, you know, by Krishna's mercy, by the blessings of the devotees, someday we may be in this position, right? Where we're seeing Krishna again. And even if it's a long, long time, it's worth the wait, and it's worth the endeavor right now. Well, I think we're 20 minutes past the hour, and so these topics are, I don't know what more I can, sitting from my perspective, I don't know what more I can say about it. It's about as much as I can wrap my brain around it, and much as I can understand from it. So let's just turn it over to you.
Thank you
very much. Hare Krishna.
Right.
Thank you so much. So much in there. Thank you so much. And hearing is very important, so just hearing opens our eyes and minds. So there's 2 points that came to my attention. One was the interchangeable or the senses, how Angani Yashyas not only happens to Krishna, but at a higher stage, all the different senses start illuminated. And hearing gives us, like you said, the graphic understanding. So it's more visual from hearing these sources, information. The question I had also was, how would you compare, I think you slightly touched on it, how would you compare devotees going out on Sankirtan and risking their lives and so much for giving Krishna consciousness? So I was hoping you'd say something that, although you slightly touched on it.
I'll tell you one thing. And of course, you know, we see, you know, persons like Srila Prabhupada who you know, of course, you know, went through so many risks and took so many chances and made so many sacrifices for our benefit. As persons in sadhana, you know, ideally that's why we go out, you know, and do whatever we do, is we're doing things to please Krishna. But in any activity that we do, I'll give you one kind of cautionary thing. Because sometimes we make the mistake that certain activities in and of themselves have value in and of themselves. And of course, I mean, anyone who goes out on Sankirtan or does something that pleases Krishna, that is a good activity. But as far as everyone who does anything has to look, why? Why am I doing that? Okay, because motivation is everything. Okay, we can, even if we go out and take so many risks, distribute books and preach and stuff, are we doing it for Krishna satisfaction and because we have mercy for others, or are we looking for maybe, you know, to be the one who's doing the best service? Do we really want to distinguish ourselves? We can do that. We can mess up even something that's so wonderful if we have the wrong attitude, is my point. But ultimately, this is supposed to be what it is. This is what motivates the pure devotees, is that the bhakti in their hearts produces compassion. They want others to attain this love of Godhead that they have, or the feeling of connection with Krishna that they have in their hearts. They want to share that at all costs. And they know, and just like Prabhupada says, the devotees are transcendently more merciful than Krishna because they understand, you know, Krishna's real purpose. And so, you know, they will go out, and because they understand this is what's pleasing to Krishna, they'll feel compassion, and they also understand it's pleasing to Krishna. But one cannot always, no matter what service we're doing, it can be preaching, it can be deity service, it can be anything else we do. It can be, you know, cleaning the temple, it can be anything we do. The service itself may be good, the activity may be good, but if our motivation is wrong, in one sense, we still may help others, but for ourselves, we won't be helping ourselves as much as we should. So we always have to look. This Bhagavad Gita is one thing that shows so much, is that the motivation of what we do is as important as what we do. We have to do the right things, but we have to do it in the right way. And yeah, it's interesting. And when Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur was explaining how you know, all the senses, when they see Krishna, all the senses become eyes. This is characteristic of spiritual body. Yeah, I guess like you said, it's mentioned Krishna's senses. Each sense can perform the function of the others. This seems to be a characteristic of the spiritual body in general. You're quite right in that. Anything else?
This morning, I knew you were going to do the last verse. I left my office, my home, and I came out to sit by the ocean to listen. And I just feel so incredibly fortunate that we're able to listen to such elevated sound vibration. I mean, what Lord Chaitanya has given to us in this age of Kali, what Prabhupada has brought to us, I'm just humbled completely. I almost feel like a sahaja sitting here under a little tree at the ocean, just listening to the such beyond words, just such sublime sound vibration. I can't thank you enough, Prabhuji, for the wonderful seminar you've given. And thank everyone for their association that this all happens, and especially Ramananda Prabhu, all the work he's done to make this happen for us, that we're all able to share together in, you know, the highest levels of transcendental sound. And Lord Chaitanya, Krishna says that I am not Naham tishtami vaikunte yoginam hridayeshu cha natatishtami narada yatragantya madbhakta. You know, I'm not in Vaikuntha, I'm not in the heart of the yogi, but I'm wherever my devotees are glorifying. And I so much feel Krishna's presence in this Sangha that we're all sharing together. So I just want to thank all of you for making me so fortunate to be able to listen to such nectar. I will ask one question. Prabhuji, you talked a lot about this total 100% selflessness. So wonderful. What a wonderful topic. So I assume then that's also true, not just Vaikuntha. I mean, not just in Vrindavan, but also on all the Vaikuntha planets. That's also the complete mood of everyone in the spiritual world, total 100% selflessness.
Yeah, that's my understanding, yes. Yeah, because the selfishness comes from the false ego, you know. And so that's any place where you reach transcendence, that's gone. You know? At least it's not actually true. The selfishness causes the false ego to develop, actually. So the persons who have impersonal liberation, they false ego is gone, but the selfishness is still there, and so that's why there's the chance they're going to fall down, because the false ego thing can arise out of that again. So even though all the subtle body is gone, the gross body is gone, still the kind of the spiritual cause of our downfall remains in them, and that hasn't been rectified. But yeah, anybody who's reached the Vaikuntha planets or reached the Goloka Vrindavan, in my understanding, that's the case, that there's complete selflessness there.
On text 54 of the Shikshastika prayers, translation, when a beloved gopi shows symptoms of anger toward Krishna, Krishna is very satisfied. Indeed, he is pleased when chastised by such a gopi. She shows her pride suitably, and Krishna enjoys that attitude. Then she gives up her pride with a little endeavor. I never understood what it was. And then the next verse goes on to say, I'll read that too. Why does a woman continue to live who knows that Krishna's heart is unhappy, but who still shows her deep anger toward him? She is interested in her own happiness. I condemn such a woman to be struck on the head with a thunderbolt, or we simply want the happiness of Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A devotee who is satisfied only with his own sense gratification certainly falls down from the service of Krishna. Being attracted by material happiness, he later joins the Prakriti Sahajiyas, who are considered to be non-devotees. So, what is she referring to when she says, in the 54, then she gives up her pride with little endeavor? Is she talking about herself, or
herself? And see, I mean, oh God, I was hoping to God that would kind of slip by and people wouldn't ask me about this, because this is a difficult topic. This, it's called mana or pride or anger, that, you know, some we see sometimes with the, because there's considered to be kind of two divisions of the gopis. Some of them are always, always will just do whatever Krishna wants, will always be, subservient to Krishna. That sort of mood is there in Rukmini in Dwarka, and in Chandravali in Vrindavan. And then there are the ones like Radharani in Vrindavan, and who's Satyabhama in Dwarka, who sometimes then, you know, will show this kind of man, this kind of anger towards Krishna. Sometimes, you know, Radharani will pout, kind of, and she won't allow Krishna to come and see her. She doesn't want to see that guy anymore. What we hear in the Krishna book and Bhagavatam, where, you know, she says all kind of derogatory things to the bumblebee that she sees about Krishna. So these are kind of difficult things, because this is super high level of love for Krishna that manifests then as anger. And all I can say is that it ultimately it means that she is angry that Krishna is not enjoying as much happiness as he might. It's like kind of like anger on his behalf, rather than like usually an anger on, when we're selfish, means that we're, you know, we're mad because he's not associating with us, and, you know, therefore I'm not going to deal with him anymore. But in this case, it's more like an anger on his behalf, and this you know, and having Krishna then having to try to pacify her and stuff makes him very happy in some way. This is part of the way that Krishna arranges his lila and his pastimes, and but it's not in any way a selfish anger, and but it's something that makes, you know, Krishna then sometimes has to pacify Radharani in different ways. There's you know, pastimes where he takes quite desperate measures sometimes to try to get her out of her sulking mood, as they sometimes call it. I mean, I'm just not on the kind of level to really fully grasp it myself, but I just know that just in general, when, like, you know, Krishna likes it when, you know, you see that with the cowherd boys, Krishna, you know, they wrestle, and sometimes the cowherd boys win, and they have to, and Krishna has to carry them on their shoulders, or Krishna, you know, drives Arjuna's chariot. He likes to become subservient, because this means that the knowledge of Krishna's superiority is in the background, and more intimate relationships as Krishna as more on an equal level, which can be more intimate, more close, more wonderful, are there. And so even this notion of where, you know, Radharani may sulk and say, okay, Krishna, you know, I'm not going to see him anymore, but she's not thinking that he's mistreated me, but that somehow she's thinking that Krishna is, you know, he's neglecting me, and therefore he's not enjoying the happiness. He's just, you know, too foolish. He's such a foolish guy. I give up. I'm trying to please him, but he's not letting me please him. And so now I'm upset because of that. I'm upset because he just won't accept his fullest happiness. That's the best I can do with that. And, you know, man is a very, very difficult and elevated concept. So that's really the best I can do with that. And, you know, that's all I can say.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sorry. Hare Krishna.
It's Carla Petit. Something I was thinking, I'm sure it facilitates pastime too. I mean, if Krishna wants to feel subservient to his devotees, when Radharani would go into man like that, I mean, he would go to so many different endeavors. I mean, even dressing, becoming like a beautiful woman to try to... Sham something, what was the full name? I can't remember it.
I can't remember either, but yeah.
Beautiful, where he dresses, you know what I mean? Do you remember the pastime? And
yeah,
he
I do.
Her and sings to her, and finally, you know, she realizes that it's him, that it couldn't be anybody else that would so completely attract her mind. But, I mean, these pastimes couldn't happen without some of these feelings and things happening.
Yeah. And it's even funny, you know, that if you go to Yavat, you'll see deities of Jatila and Abhimanyu, because, you know, even them, you know Jatila is there always, you know, accusing Krishna of you know, messing with her daughter-in-law, and you know, and saying all kinds of harsh things to him. But you know, even there's a point in the I think it's the I'm not sure which one of, whether it's the which one of Rupa Goswami's works there, but she also reveals that Krishna is so wonderful that really in her heart she believes that Krishna and Radharani should be together. You know, so on the external part, she's always the obstacle. You always see that. What are the two, Vidagdha Madhava and the Lalita Madhava. And you always see in those, whenever Krishna and Radharani are about to meet, then somehow this Jatila comes up and spoils everything. You know, but she's actually, they have deities that are worshiping her in Javat because she's also, like you said, facilitating the pastimes. She's making it more enjoyable. That those obstacles makes it more relishable. And so you know, you're right, you know, it facilitates more interesting and intimate Leela, you know, where Krishna then has to try to pacify Radharani. You're right on that. I think you're quite right.
Actually, there was something as you were speaking, I was thinking that actually Yashoda wanted Radha and Krishna to be married, but they couldn't be because I can't remember who it was that told them that if they did, that Krishna would die. I mean, literally, that astrologically, something that it couldn't happen. And yet, something about Radharani's food would help him live a long life, and that's why she made all the different arrangements.
Yeah, she got that blessings from Durvasa Muni, that whatever she cooked would be like nectar. And so she could. They actually got married at one point, but everybody forgot about it. So there's that place in Vrindavan where they got married. Lord Brahma officiated.
Isn't that where
everything.
Brahma came down when they were?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They came down, but of course everybody forgot about it. So it's not. It doesn't facilitate the pastimes. They're of course they are more together than any marriage could make them. But, and there's even supposedly a region of Goloka. Where they act as a married couple. There's an Aishwarya place in Goloka. Don't ask me to explain that, but there is some region of Goloka Vrindavan where it's like that. But not in Goloka.
There was one more thing that I thought of as you were speaking was when you were talking about totally selfless love. Sometimes here in the material world, people aspire for that, of course, not knowing really what it is. And I was thinking that something to remember and to communicate is that totally selfless love is only meant to be directed towards Krishna because we can't have it for anyone else.
Yeah, it's only possible there, actually, yeah. Sometimes we do have some appreciation for that. We have some understanding that selflessness is a higher thing. But yeah, the only way it's really possible is if you find the true object of love, which is Krishna. It won't work otherwise.
Yeah. And then the other thing I was thinking was compassion and love in the material world manifests only to give Krishna consciousness. But that's true compassion. And like I know I was reading in Sri Bhagavatamrita where I think, I can't remember if it was Krishna who was speaking to Gopakumar, but there's some part in there where he was saying that he saw, you know, the living, he saw Gopakumar desiring, wandering, not knowing him, and that he actually violated his own principle of free will to send his Satyavesh avatar, Jayanta.
Yes. Yeah.
Because he wants us home with him, enjoying pastimes with him more than we do.
Yeah. Yeah, he just thought, you're just never going to do it, man. You know? I can see you're just never going to do it, you know. You're just taking forever, and you're just not making any progress. You're stuck there in the world. And so, you know, so he sent someone to help you. This, Lord Chaitanya, to me, it seems, has a similar mood. You know, Krishna says, you surrender unto me, yeah, but Lord Chaitanya comes after us, you know. He says, "Okay, you guys are just too dumb, you know." Krishna comes, he shows himself, he gives him more than fair. It's more than fair. He says, "Whoever you are, whatever you've done, you just surrender to me, and I take it all away, and I accept you back, unconditional, you know, acceptance." That's more than fair, you know. But we're so stupid, we don't take it. We say, "Oh, okay, that's nice, meh," you know, meh. Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya comes after us, you know. Jesus is down. Prabhupada comes after us. You know, this is how it is. Yeah, you know, because we're just too stupid. You know, we're too slow. And that's what it is. It says in Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada says in the purport that, you know, we don't try to save the clothes of the drowning person. We try to save the person. So that's what real compassion means. Otherwise, you know, we're saving the clothing, the gross or subtle body. Real compassion means, you know, help people attain their only real benefit. Attain it ourselves and try to help others. So, yeah, it is. That's what compassion means. Otherwise, it's a distorted version of it, you know. It's a distorted version. It's better. I mean, look, we'd rather live next to Mother Teresa than we would to Genghis Khan. You know what I mean? When we say there's no selflessness, real selflessness in the material world, you know, there is still a lot of difference between the mode of goodness and the mode of ignorance. And so, you know, it still it's not transcendental, it's not completely selfless, but at least even the kind of material compassion that we have here, it makes it a better world to live in.
Well, we go over that, Prabhu. I know you're going to quit now because you have to do everything on time, but I was going to say fantastic seminar. Really, really appreciate your association. I myself, you know, when I kind of read these things in the Shastras, I feel a little anxious. You know, this is way, way above me. But just like when you read the Krishna book, you feel guided. And you can read, you know, throughout the 10th canto, if you read the Krishna book, because of Srila Prabhupada's purports, you know, you feel safe. So similarly, even though these are very elevated topics, I personally feel very safe listening to them and feel inspired. You know, so thank you so much for your association and for doing this series. It was really great.
Well, I want to echo what Narahari Prabhu said, that for all of us, it's really great to be able to have this sangha available. You've done a really magnificent job by, you know, organizing this and facilitating this, and you know, I'm happy to be a small part of it, and to come in sometimes and get all of your associations is very enlivening for me. I think it helps me, I'm sure, more than you, and so I'm happy to be able to come in once in a while.
Now, I do have an announcement, and that is that Giri Govardhan Prabhu has agreed to stay on to, at least for the time being, on this part of the year, unless something else happens, every 2 weeks to give Bhagavatam class on Wednesday. Is that correct?
That's it. Yeah, alternate Wednesday.
Haribol.
So we're looking forward to it, and we'll be apart from your association completely here. That's pleasing to me.
Well, that's wonderful. Okay, so that's coming up in 2 weeks from now, Wednesday, the 5th, I think. No, 11th. Sorry, 11th. So, yeah, we really look forward to that. Thank you so much, Prabhu. Really, really appreciate it.
So, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hi. Hari Bol, everyone. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.